everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. Yay! This show is for June 24th, 2016, which I'm pretty sure, yeah, it's the last show of the month. Yeah. So,
next time we do one of these, it will be July.
Yes, and it'll be a lot hotter.
And Canada Day.
Yeah. So, some stuff definitely went down this week.
Yeah.
Serious world-changing events, and we're going to talk about those somewhat a little bit, but after that, of course, we're then going headlong into the silliness, so yeah. We'll be talking about Adult Swim, which is going to be having up this September, is going to be on the air for 15 years. We're going to be talking about... well, we're going to have another Gamer Mag Remembers this time about Electronic Gaming Monthly. We'll also be talking about other stuff. And, of course, we'll be answering the age-old question, does Bruno Mars is gay?
Okay.
I know you're probably shaking your head and thinking, what the hell are you talking about? You'll get it when we get there.
Yeah,
I promise you.
Yeah.
But to start us off, Phil, why don't you go ahead and start us off? Tell us what you've been up to this week.
So I've been, you know, still going through the Wheel of Time. I finished book 8, and I'm like 95% of the way through book 9 now. So I've just been motoring through those last few ones.
Awesome.
It's still enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so stuff's happening there. I've gotten on a bit of a Mythbusters kick, so I've been watching old episodes of that. Last night I watched their pirate episode where they tested whether, you know, pirates wore eye patches to preserve their night vision. Turns out that's a pretty plausible thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the fact that they lost an eye.
Yeah, well, when they have lost an eye, yeah, that's kind of one reason why you would wear an eye patch, but if you haven't lost your eye, then, you know, eye patches are good for preserving your night vision if you're on a dark ship and you have to go into the light. So, yeah, kind of a good thing. So that was that. Well, Top Gear, still plugging away at that, because fourth episode of the new season aired, so I caught up on that. Hmm. So they tested the Tesla Model X. Yeah, it was a little bit of a different film than the last time they tested a Tesla, so I'll just leave it at that. Yeah, Elon Musk was not pleased that last time, so shouldn't have too much to complain about for this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And apart from that, I've also been listening to a bunch of records and fiddling around with my turntable, plugging and unplugging phono cartridges and doing all those interesting things.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the vinyl hobby, especially with, you know, potential for another two turntables coming in soon. I hope that that actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
And other than that, I've also been playing The Sequence, which is a fascinating game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really straining my brain now because I'm having to not only move the little cell around, but now I'm actually having to move other pieces.
Mm-hmm.
To get that cell around, to go around. So, yeah, it's fun. It's relaxing, and it's one of those things where, you know, if you get stuck, just put it down for a while and walk away, and then the next day you pick it up, and it's like, oh, well, why didn't I think of that before? So, that's, you know, pretty much my week. Kind of the same as past couple of weeks, but, you know, it's the summer. Not a whole heck of a lot going on around here.
Oh, yeah. It's... Honestly, when it gets this hot, I'd just rather avoid going outside. So.
Yeah. Ditto.
All right. Well, what about you, Chris?
Well, this has been an amazing week as the Cleveland Cavaliers won the NBA title on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Our first title in this city in over 50 years. So it's been one of those weeks where the whole city just went nuts, and it was a great feeling having an hour-long drought just shut down for foreseeable future. And on Wednesday, they had a great parade.
Mm-hmm.
Over 1.3 million people showed up. And the city's population is just under 400,000, so at essentially about three times the city's population out.
Lots of Cavaliers fans.
Now, is Cavaliers, is that the team that LeBron is on, or is that another one?
Yeah.
That's LeBron's team?
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely check out some of the pictures on this hashtag, the parade. You can see the streets just full of people. They actually were supposed to start at 11 a.m., probably didn't get started until about 12, because they had forgotten to put barriers up on some parts of the route.
Whoops.
And if you look at the one picture that has, I hate trying to get the pictures on Twitter because they don't make it easy to just single out one picture.
I've got the, I'm looking at them right now, just describing one.
If there's the one where you can see it, see the baseball park in it.
There it is. Holy shit.
That's most of the route. They came from, they had the basketball stadium and the baseball stadium right next to each other. So essentially came around the one corner there to the right, around that other corner, and way in the back to where there's a bunch of parks in the back.
There is just there is just no street anymore.
No,
it's just gone.
Yeah, I think that right bottom corner, they had forgotten to barricade, so there's just a ton of people there, barely in a room. I think you could probably look around for some more pictures around there. But essentially, the way they got cars through there, essentially the cops had to just stand right next to the cars, walk with them, and just push people just enough out of the way so their feet wouldn't get run over.
Yeah.
That's how close they were to the cars.
Wow.
It's just a ton of people, as you can see in a lot of these pictures. The whole affair was probably supposed to take a couple hours. It ended up being about 6 hours. Just because they had to constantly stop and make room and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, just ton of people and a lot of fun at the end when they got to do speeches and such. GM was talking about some of the iconic like bad moments in the city's history where they have names for these, it's like the drive, the fumble, the shot, things like that. And he was trying to put a spin on that and say now we've got new moments from this championship when things like the block, the three, then the last thing he calls it the D, which then you see the bunch of the players behind just start cracking up, realizing what the hell he just said. And LeBron gets up at the end to do his speech. Sort of has a great like 60-minute speech. You can look it up on Twitter or YouTube, probably find it. And he basically talks to everybody that's on the team, thanks him, talks stories and stuff like that all throughout. This is on live TV. He curses a bunch. Motherfucker, shit, fuck. It says on live TV.
Yeah.
I think one station might have tried to bleep it. They were still late on it. I heard people saying like they were bleeping like the very end of the words instead of
beginning
on the words. They didn't have that much warning time.
Yeah.
Some great stuff there. It's just there's a picture there with J.R. Smith with a big sign that says 2016 election. Hillary Trump has a check mark next to J.R. Smith's sign, his name. Things like that. You can see other pictures here. There's people just all over parking garages just trying to get any good view of the things that are going on. There's one funny picture I've seen somewhere of these people sort of hanging out in this one parking garage where it looks like they are wall climbing a little bit. Like sort of where you got those two tight spaces and you essentially try and use your legs to climb up. But it's not what it looks like because they're just big open spots at these sort of open areas on the parking garages. So they just stand right across to the other open spot. Essentially kind of hanging over this big gap. It's just, it was a lot of fun to go through that this week.
Oh, God. I just remembered, you live in Cleveland. They're going to be having the GOP National Convention next month there.
Yeah, so if you saw in one of those pictures on that thing, there's a big sign with LeBron.
yeah.
on it where he's posing in front of the sign. Where he's got his uniform, says Cleveland on the back. They're going to try to take it down for the Republican National Convention.
Yeah.
That thing is an icon sign. It's like, if you want to lose Ohio, there's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
Take down that sign, especially now that they won. They want to take it down and replace it with something else for the Republican National Convention, which that's not going to go very well. There's already petitions going up to tell them not to do that.
Well, I would like to hold a moment of silence to the former city of Cleveland, because after this happens, I'm not sure Cleveland's going to exist anymore. I'm pretty sure they're just going to burn the motherfucker down.
Yeah, it could go badly. It's really good.
But then again, Cleveland is also the city that has a river that occasionally catches on fire, so...
Mm.
That's right, a river that catches on fire.
Mm. That was decades ago.
Cuyahoga.
Moving on from that. Still going with The Simpsons. I'm in season 6, which, as far as the DVD sets are concerned, this is the one where they started doing The Simpsons heads.
Okay.
So the weirdly shaped head boxes just... completely clashed with all the rest of the seasons where they're normal sort of box set things.
Yeah, and don't fit on shelves properly.
Yeah, I think people could send away for the regular boxes, like pay for them, which is dumb. But season 5 had some great stuff. The Treehouse of Horror episode in this season is probably one of the best. That's got the shinning. let's see. Oh yeah, the one where the teachers and principals eat the students, sort of cook them up. And the last one is, the one where Homer repairs the toaster, sends him back in time, so he has to try to not kill anything, or else it'll affect the present when he goes back. Obviously see some great stuff like when Ned Flanders is taking over the world. and then Homer essentially gets fed up at one point, just takes a bat and just beats the shit out of everything he can.
Yeah.
And gets back. I think he gets back and finds out it's mostly the same, just everybody has lizard tongues. and there's one great scene where he comes back. They got like a really rich house, big cars. His two sister-in-laws are dead, and the only negative is that there's no donuts. So he goes run screaming, and you see it rains right after, and it's donut rain. So it's like if you stayed just a few more seconds, you'd have seen his paradise.
Yeah.
Some other great episodes: Itchy and Scratchy Land. There's one where Sideshow Bob gets out and runs for mayor or governor.
Yeah.
That one's great. The one where they go into both become hockey players, sort of fight each other on that stuff. Just a lot of great stuff. The one with the stonecutters. The one where the comet is about to hit Springfield. Ends up not. Because all their pollution in the atmosphere burns up most of it. Lots of great stuff in this season. And this is the one where the last episode is Who Shot Mr. Burns?
That first one was part of
that. That was a good one.
That was a classic right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one they had a nationwide contest to see if somebody could guess who did it.
Yeah.
I think they said one person.
Who was it that actually shot Mr. Burns? I forgot.
It's Maggie.
Oh, right.
Yeah, the gun falls into her lap and it shoots him.
Ah.
Yeah, that's one of those, like this episode could only work because there was no internet really to figure out.
Yeah.
So if they did that now, just people would be sending in answers for every character they could think of.
Yeah.
Eventually you get somebody to win it. It's sort of one of the few times they do sort of like serialized stuff. This has the first part in this season, and the first episode of the next season's the conclusion. So lots of good stuff with that. And I've also been playing NBA 2K16, which is free for PS4 for PS Plus people this for another week or so.
Yeah.
I've been mainly playing the career mode, and it's terrible. Because they essentially let Spike Lee direct a bunch of cutscenes to tell a story.
Yeah, they want to. Lord. They're not going to do that again.
Yeah, it's awful. It's real dumb in some great ways, but the part of the game where you're supposed to play it is real bad because of that. A lot of the cutscenes end where it seems like you're supposed to make choices, but then they don't give you any choices to make. It's like, here they have a long cutscene where it's like, oh, you gotta do this, or you gotta do this. Now it's your turn to make a choice. And shifts out, trophy. Well, I guess a choice was made. I never got a chance to do it. So it does it all for you, and then they greatly limit the amount of games you can play. So you start off playing high school games, then go into college where they've only assigned like 10 teams, something like that. So you're not actually playing in the NCAA.
Yeah.
It's just like, here's four random games between these teams. And then you play like a title game, and there's like making story things that in the game itself, like, oh, I got injured somehow, and supposedly I'm not playing well. There's no way to know what the hell's going on. One of the cutscenes, randomly a girlfriend appears. It's like, who the hell is this?
Yeah.
And she stays around for the rest of the time. There's a lot of stuff about one of the your best friend since childhood named Vic, who is a sore spot when you get to the pros because you're the owner of the team, threatens you to drop him or else he's going to get rid of you. And he, spoilers, he dies in a car chase at the end. They just kill him off. And then at the very end, his ghost, he comes out with like a white, white jacket and suit on, and is sort of reading this like yellow notepad where he's written like a letter to the player, the person you made, like explaining his, what was going on with him. It's like really stupid.
Spike Lee.
There's a lot of great moments, really stupid things that go on with this. The whole premise is that you are you have parents and a twin sister, but they're all set in their race. So if you make a white person, somehow you're fraternal twins with this with your sister, and she's black, you're white. Okay. Both parents are black. It's like, okay. It's just broke it completely.
Yeah.
The only choices you get to make is which college you go to, and then for whatever reason, at the end of the first season, your rookie season, you only play 8 games your first rookie season, and when they sort of simulate the rest of the games, your stats are terrible. So even though I was like the number 13th pick overall, a lottery pick, I ended up with like 6 points a game because I don't know. They simulate your stats like you're a scrub, you're nobody.
Yeah.
You know, your first round pick. And the other fact is anybody that's drafted in the first round doesn't get a 1-year contract. They get at least like 3 years with like options, maybe go up to 5.
Yeah.
But they let you just leave at the end of your first year. And this isn't the first time they've done that. In these modes, like it's been happening since I started playing these modes in the NBA 2K games, which it's like, no, that's not how it works.
Yeah,
you get at least the first few years with your team that drafts you. You can leave. Then they essentially let you go, start doing the regular part of the career mode from there, but you have to sacrifice your whole rookie season just to tell this stupid story. And it just causes the whole rest of the game to kind of fall apart on that. Where it's like, I'd rather just have a normal career mode, or at least the option to do that.
Yeah.
It's just really dumb. Why do they do it? I think I got EA doing this with their next FIFA game that's going to have a story mode.
Oh, yeah.
It at least looks more competent.
Yeah.
Doesn't look like this unfinished mode that's in NBA 2K.
Yeah. Hopefully there won't be, like, you know, people's ghosts showing up for no apparent reason.
Yeah. Yeah, there's one point where they play NBA 2K in the game, which is weird.
On the Dreamcast, I hope.
Yeah. No, it's like current gen.
Oh. That's weird.
Yeah, like when I started up the second season earlier today, it's like, oh, here's a texting thing. Like you can pull up your phone with text and stuff. It's like, why wasn't this here before? It's like text from people from the story mode sort of talking to you from last season. It's like, okay.
Oh, so here's the actual game now.
Yeah, just lots of weird stuff going on with that game.
Mm.
The regular part of the game's pretty good. I was playing the franchise mode a little bit. I'm not a huge fan of that just because it kind of feels like God mode a little bit, where it's like, okay, I want this guy to score, so I'm going to pass to him, have him do whatever, and make a shot. It just feels like not enough sort of, like you can't just play like a normal game.
Yeah.
That well, because with like Cleveland, their entire offense generally goes through their small fort, which is not how the game's normal logic works, where it has to go through the point guard. So like just trying to play with that, even when you set up the strategy has to go through LeBron, it doesn't work. It's just a weird way that it breaks the whole thing.
Yeah,
they just have a weird way of doing their offense with a guy that is almost completely unique in the league.
Yeah.
As far as being a guy that's 6'9" is what is as good a ball handler as any point guard in the league, but can play pretty much all five positions he wants. And the other game I've been playing is Dark Cloud. Just playing some more of that. Finished the boss in the first area, got to the second, which is sort of a forest area.
Yeah.
And the dungeons are a bit weird for that one. Most of the enemies I've seen are these weird little elf guys with their names are all like days of the week. So yeah. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And the name is indicative of what type of attack they have.
Okay.
But they're incredibly hard to hit with melee. So I have to constantly switch out whenever I see them to the cat lady to use her slingshot to attack them.
Yeah.
Sort of switching back and forth constantly. Because I'd like to get the their weapons leveled up at the same time. But it's but I've luckily gotten some items to increase my carrying capacity up to like 80 now. So I have way more than I need. So I just go back and buy a bunch of repair powder to repair the weapons when they get low on their HP, and water and food and stuff like that to fill up my health and water meter. Still liking it. It's nice to have a new like template for the dungeons, stuff like that. Though it's still weird to me that I have to go all the way back to the first area to buy stuff.
Yeah.
So I kind of have to get out of the dungeon and warp over to the exit and go to the world map, then back to the other area, then go over to the merchant. It's kind of weirdly set up. Maybe there's going to be a merchant that shows up in the second village.
Yeah.
I haven't unlocked yet.
Yeah, there probably is. I think there was.
Yeah. Still liking that a lot. And I guess I'll talk about this a little bit later when we talk about the Steam sale.
Okay.
But I picked up Stardew Valley, and that looking forward to playing that this weekend.
Hmm.
I didn't start it today because I knew I would probably not want to stop if I didn't.
Yeah.
Just avoid it altogether. So, yeah, that's been it. So how about you, Brandon?
Well, next I have been playing Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines.
Hmm. That's an old one.
Yeah, it's an old one, but it's a good one.
Hmm.
And it's the first time I've ever played it, so.
How's it hold up?
You know what? Despite the fact that the graphics are kind of primitive, it holds up really well. Partly because, you know, the voice acting is so good. I will admit that the controls are a little convoluted.
Yeah.
Like, you know, there's this thing where it's like you get basically have a button for literally everything. you know, it's like, you know, you want to pick up something, you have to press E, you hit right click. I'm like, why couldn't I just pick this up, with like a right mouse click and then, you know, already have it in my inventory? No. They thought of everything.
Yeah. Well, it is one of those classic computer RPGs, so they were kind of notorious to be a little bit complicated.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But that being said, it's really a lot of fun. It's probably one of the best sort of vampire-related games outside of Castlevania I've ever played.
Yeah.
Simply because it takes into account the fact that since you're a vampire, you basically have to go out and feed.
Yeah.
Which is enjoyable and also stressful as hell because you got to make sure nobody's watching you.
Yeah.
Because that's sort of how the whole thing goes. It's quote-unquote a masquerade.
Yeah.
Everybody's trying to put up the illusion that they don't exist.
Hmm.
And basically there's only like so many chances you have of breaking it before your game ends.
Yeah.
And I can be particularly bad because, you know, there's the guys who come, basically there's like these group of guys that are basically like enforcers.
Yeah.
And sorry about that. But there's like this whole thing where if you break the masquerade too many times, they'll start sending out the enforcers after you.
Yeah.
And those guys are a pain. they can pretty much murder you in one hit.
Yeah.
You want to take it slow and be careful.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else other than that? I've been listening to a lot of, like, really obscure 80s metal. Sort of the bands that, you know, some metalheads will know but never really made it big.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the old sort of, a lot of like the big, well, you know, a lot of the sort of cult, like, new wave of British metal bands, you know, like everybody knows about, you know, Iron Maiden and Def Leppard and all that, but bands like, you know, Tokyo Blade and Tigers of Pantang, you know, bands like that. Another group is, actually from Canada. Called Thor.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of Thor?
No, I'm not.
Thor is basically it was this 80s metal band that was fronted by this dude who in a previous life had worked as a strong man.
Okay.
So during the shows he would bend metal pipes, blow into water bottles to make them pop. And they were basically like Manowar on steroids.
Wow.
Yeah.
Manowar is already pretty nuts.
Yeah. And basically they just took every 80s metal trope and just embraced it wholeheartedly. They also were in a movie, a really, really terrible movie. It was a like Z-grade horror flick.
Okay.
Trying to remember what it was called, because you can totally get it on DVD. Rock and Roll Nightmare. That's it. He's even on the movie poster. Here, take a look for yourself. Come on, Skype.
Yeah, that looks... Yeah, I'm going to have to check them out. I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they're originally from Vancouver. So there was also the band Bitch, which was a L.A. metal band fronted by a dominatrix.
Hmm.
And you can kind of guess what their music was all about.
Yeah.
There was also, like, a band I really like, but I'm surprised they never made it big, was a band called Lizzie Borden.
Hmm.
Basically, they were sort of like the L.A. hair metal version of Alice Cooper.
Okay.
You know, they basically had the theatricality, but they looked like a you know, band off of the Sunset Strip, you know?
Yeah.
All the makeup, spandex, poofy hair.
Yeah.
Stuff, which, by the way, we're going to be talking about later on in this show.
Yeah.
You know, and there's also, you know, I've other bands like, you know, Manowar, which you would believe has a huge audience in Europe, but few people in the U.S. actually know about them.
Yeah.
Even though they are freaking amazing.
Yeah. Well, their newer stuff started to get a little bit stupid, but
yeah
their older stuff is a lot better.
Yeah, and that's kind of surprising because they've been around for a while. You'd had expected it started getting stupid a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been listening to that. I've been rereading, I've started rereading the Dragon Riders of Pern series.
Okay, you'll have to tell me whether I should actually bother with this series, because I'm, like, still kind of on the fence whether I should look at it or not.
The first three books are amazing.
Hmm.
They are very readable.
Yeah.
They're sort of like, you can ask a lot of young kids, and they'll especially if they grew up in the 80s or 90s, and they'll tell you the Pern series is, like, their gateway drug. Because it's essentially a science fiction series that is told like a fantasy series.
Yeah.
And basically, are you familiar with sort of the overall sort of concept?
Yeah.
The whole scenario?
Yeah.
It's basically a bunch of people, a bunch of a forgotten colony from Earth who live in sort of a, who sort of atavized into a, an old school sort of feudal society.
Yeah.
But they have this thing that happens where there's this star that's near their planet. And every time it's near their planet, but it's not like always there. It's part of the orbit.
Yeah.
And every time the planet orbits this star, the gravitational fields between them two do something or other. And what happens is that this substance they call thread starts coming down. It's basically like cottony, like spores that are basically acidic and burn and destroy everything that it touches. So what they do is the people of Pern over the generations have taken sort of a native lizard-like group, what they call fire lizards, and have sort of genetically engineered and bred them so that they basically become very similar to what you call dragons.
Yeah.
And some of these dragons can breathe fire. Some of them can't. And basically it's all the dragons riders and the dragons themselves are like divided up into different groups. And basically their job is to, whenever a thread fall happens, it's their job to go and destroy the thread before it touches the planet. And that's sort of the whole sort of gist of the Dragon Riders of Pern series. It's, you know, if you can kind of see where How to Train Your Dragon kind of got its ideas.
Kind of, yeah.
But it's really good. It's It's definitely like one of those series that is kind of engineered towards young adults before that was really even a thing.
Yeah.
But it's really enjoyable. Honestly, I would if you really want to, you can read some of the later books, but the later books are divisive, to say the least. Especially the ones that McCaffrey's son Todd writes.
Okay.
Some people like them. Others think they're basically ascended fan fiction. But yeah, if you're really interested, the first three books, especially the original trilogy, are. Yeah. Well, I say trilogy. It became a quartet in the 90s because she added a fourth book to it. But if you get a chance, definitely read them. Reason I'm reading it is because I got my $31 or so dollar settlement from the whole Apple ebook lawsuit.
Oh yeah.
And so I've got those credits, and now I decided to give them a shot. So figured, hell with it. I might as well reread this book series because I haven't reread it in almost 10 years.
Yeah.
So
may as well.
Yeah. Let's see. What else? Oh, yeah. I totally sprained my foot this week.
Ow.
Okay. So everybody knows how I basically do my daily walking.
Oh, yeah.
And I do the daily walking at this sort of track next to this high school that's down the street from where I live.
Yeah.
And to get down there, there's this hill that you have to go down.
Hmm.
And, well, yeah, I say hill. There's a staircase, obviously.
Yeah.
But after I finish my laps, I walk up the hill instead of the staircase because it's part of the workout.
Okay.
And I stepped into what I thought was a mound of grass, but turned out to be a pothole.
Oof.
And it's an interesting sensation when your foot turns in a direction it's not made.
No, that's not fun.
And the thing was, it didn't actually really bother me at first. It was like a mild annoyance.
Hmm.
And, you know, I came back home and I got back on the couch and I had supper, and just as the night wore on, it just started throbbing. And, you know, I mean, there wasn't any swelling or anything. I could still move my toes and kind of move my ankle, but it was just, I couldn't walk on it.
Yeah.
In fact, that first night I basically took one of my dad's golf clubs and used it as a cane so I could hobble over to my bathroom.
Oof.
But it's almost better now.
Yeah.
It's just I still can't put too much weight on it, so I'm still kind of walking with a limp. But yeah. it was not fun.
No. Yeah.
But yeah. So. Let me think. Is there anything else? Not really much support. All right then. Well, I guess, has anybody else got anything left to add?
No, we're good. Well, actually, there is one more thing, and I'm going to talk about more of this on Sunday, but I have played Bloodstained.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
And?
It's everything we wanted it to be.
And more?
I don't know about the and more, because the demo is kind of short.
Oh.
But, yeah, the control is spot on. The animation is perfect. It's mechanically, it's got that fluidity that Symphony of the Night had, where you can not only jump up onto platforms, but up from underneath.
Oh.
So that was, you know, kind of one of those little details that I wondered if they were going to keep in, and I'm glad they did.
Oh, so... Unfortunately, we're not going to have another Mighty Number 9 situation.
No, it doesn't look like it. Looks like this one's actually being done properly.
Oh, man, that's... speaking of Mighty Number 9, we're going to have plenty to say about that Sunday.
Yeah.
You're all mighty disappointed.
Yeah, haven't played it yet, so I don't know, but we'll find out.
The truth of the matter is, basically, people describe it as that it's a Mega Man clone, which we already knew it was a Mega Man clone.
Yeah.
It just, it doesn't have any of the charm. that the old Mega Man has. In fact, it looks like it actually had a graphic downgrade.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I think Inafune, when he started this project, got in way over his head.
Yeah. He just didn't know where to draw the line on, you know, the goals, and ended up biting off more than he could chew.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was just, you know, we know that he can make good games because we've played a bunch of his stuff in the past.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we played Dead Rising and Onimusha, you know, and not the least the Mega Man games he worked on.
Yeah.
The guy knows what he's doing.
Yep.
But it seems like ever since Concept started, it's just been...
Yeah, it's just been hard.
Yeah. I mean, okay, you know what? Like, let me look at the games that have come out with Concept. Like, okay, there was a... you know, Sweet... The first one I remembered was Sweet Fuse, which, like... The second one he did was Soul Sacrifice, which is... actually wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it's supposed to be pretty good.
It's just really... it's divisive, but
yeah.
Good. And then he put out, what was it, Yaiba, the Ninja Gaiden Z?
Yeah.
And that thing was just an abomination.
Yeah, well, he wasn't really that involved with that one.
He was
producer. I think Spark Unlimited worked with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's now he's got, you know, and then Mighty No. 9, and that thing just... So he's got ReCore and Red Ash that'll be coming up next. So
yeah, ReCore is more armature.
Yeah, he's only producing it.
Yeah.
Red Ash is the one that he's really taking the lead on. So you might want to cross your fingers, because if this is going to be the future, his future, Mighty No. 9 did not look good.
No.
All right. Well, that being said, it's time for everybody's favorite segment of the show, which is, of course, Brandon's Random Factoid. So, I wanted to just there's really no context to anything about the story that I'm about to tell you. Except that it happened, and it was awesome, and that it basically made the Ku Klux Klan look like complete idiots. So, basically, this is the thing. It's called the Battle of Hayes Pond. So, back in 1958, well, actually, before I need to sort of give this with sort of a bit of history. Back in 1954, the U.S. was when they had Brown versus Board of Education.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bill, do you know what that was?
Vaguely, I think it involved it's like a black student who was not, you know, being denied.
It's basically the Supreme Court ruling that basically stopped segregation.
Okay.
And basically what happened is after that, of course, the then recently revived Ku Klux Klan, because they had at that point kind of gone dormant for a couple years after they basically kind of disappeared in the 30s and only came back up around the civil rights era. And so they heard this and they decided, you know what, we're a bunch of idiots in pointy hats, so now we gotta go ahead and just do a bunch of terrorist shit all across the American South. So that's exactly what they did, and they went all over the South, and they intimidated basically every African-American and every other racial minority they could come in contact with. And specifically in South Carolina, their Grand Dragon, which, for those of you who don't know, the Grand Dragon was sort of the state, the leader of particular state chapter of the Ku Klux Klan. That's the Grand Dragon. And this guy was named James W. Catfish Cole. Yes, I said catfish. It's actually in his name. So in 1956, there was the inhabitants of this town called Robson County, North Carolina. in 1956, they had managed to achieve some limited federal recognition from the federal government under the fact that many of the individuals were descendants of the Lumbee tribe, of the Lumbee. The Lumbees are a kind of, they're sort of unique among a lot of southern Indian tribes in the fact that they are, of all the big Indian tribes, theirs was always a bit more westernized. They assimilated a lot better, but they were also major targets of racial repression and stuff pretty much throughout its history.
Right.
So, basically, the Klan hated this whole campaign because, as Catfish Colum said, he considered the Lumbees a mongrel race of largely African origin.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he was afraid that, and it's bullshit because the whole argument is bullshit. But he basically thought that if they could successfully portray themselves as Indians, they would then be able to attempt pass as white, which would then further blur the racial lines in the segregated South. So in 1957, he basically started this campaign of harassment to intimidate the Lumbee, and you know, when that comes to Klan, you kind of know what that type of campaign of intimidation is, stuff like cross burnings, rallies, nooses, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And then in 1958, they burned a cross on the lawn of a Lumbee woman in St. Paul's, North Carolina, because they had heard that she was dating a white man.
Okay.
And you think, oh man, this can't bad. Then he gave a speech at a Klan rally, and later that week, and where he basically went in front of the town of Maxton and basically said that Lumbee women were harlots of loose morals. That was finally the last straw for the Lumbee. So, and I'm get ready for this. You're going to love this. On the night of the rally, 50 to 100 Klansmen arrived at the private field near Hayes Pond. So, Colt, and they were going to set up, they were going to have a rally. And, you know, these days when the Klan have a rally, they usually have a huge group of protesters that show up.
Yeah.
Or, I guess, counter-demonstrators or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
But back in that day, that wasn't the case. It was usually the Klan, if they had a rally, would usually outnumber any counter-protesters that would show up. Not this time. Because before Cole could get the arrangements finished to start the rally, about 500 Lumbee men, many armed with rocks, sticks, and guns, yes, I said guns, appeared, and get this, they encircled the assembled Klansmen. Then the Lumbee started shooting out the lights. This is one of those big lights that they set up for like a night rally.
Yeah.
You know, the electric light bulbs. Yeah, they shot one of them out and basically darkened the whole field. Then they charged, started firing shots at the Klansmen, several of whom briefly returned fire to no avail. Four of the Klansmen were wounded in the exchange of gunfire. The rest of them basically fled, leaving family members, public address system, unlit cross, and various Klan regalia behind. And, Catfish Cole himself reportedly left his wife behind and escaped through a nearby swamp. And afterwards, the Lumbee, all that stuff that the Klan had left behind, the Lumbee took. And they took a bunch of pictures with them posing with it. As a matter of fact, here's one of them right here. This is the big KKK banner that was supposed to be over the stage. And they took it.
Looks like wasn't quite the night they were expecting.
No, it was not. And there's a bunch of pictures you can see of all these Lumby dudes showing up with rifles. And they're just like, you know, when did we stop reacting to Klan rallies this way? Because honestly, the world would be just a much better place if we did. Because seriously, these guys.
Yeah.
They're the Klan. They're the ween on the ass of Southern American history that will not die.
Yeah.
So, there's your list for today. If a bunch of hate-dripping, inbred morons wearing white hoods show up in your town, just get a bunch of dudes with hunting rifles to show up, and they'll skedaddle.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly. And that's been this week's Brandon's Random Factoid.
Right.
That wasn't that fun.
Yep.
We all learned something today.
Yep. Racism sucks.
Yeah. And sometimes, oh yeah, and the Klan are total cowards too.
Yeah.
So, moving on from that, we are going to be talking about our sort of big world topic. Because something pretty surprising happened this week.
Yeah, there was that whole referendum over in the UK this week.
Yes, so basically what the referendum was, it was whether or not Great Britain should remain within the European Union.
Hmm.
And pretty much every expert out there was expecting this referendum to lose pretty soundly.
Hmm.
I mean, obviously the whole thing got really heated. Up to and including the murder of a Labour MP,
yeah.
Joe Cox, by the longtime white supremacist Thomas Mayer.
Mm.
And, you know, everyone thought that, you know, no, this restaurant, it had no chance of surviving. It was going to lose. And, I mean, this was something that, you know, this wasn't just something that, you know, like, here, like, if this was like a U.S. thing, it would be somewhere just the Republicans supported and Democrats didn't. No, there were people on all sides, all parts of the political spectrum that had differing opinions. There were, there were Tories who believed, you know, conservatives who believed in staying in the European Union. There were left-wingers and Labour people who were saying it would be good to be out of the European Union.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, it was mostly the far right that sort of commanded the leave the European Union debate. Unfortunately, because there actually are some pretty good left-wing arguments for getting out of the EU, specifically all that austerity bullshit.
Yeah.
But in what really basically came to as a shock to the entire world, UK voted 51-48. To leave the European Union.
Yeah.
And, frankly, the world is in shock.
Yeah. But it is a referendum, we have to keep in mind, so it's not binding.
Yeah, that's actually something I think that a lot of the media, especially over here, has done a very bad job of reminding people.
Yeah, and also, like, I don't know if the UK is like here in Canada, but 51-48... If it's that close, there's going to be a re-referendum.
Well, according to the EU's bylaws, the UK has about 2 years to deal with this.
Yeah.
And after those 2 years are up, it's completely within the rest of the EU's right to decide whether or not to keep the UK in or to just let them go.
Yeah.
And keep in mind,
keep in mind up here, like I'm in Quebec.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a question that comes up every few years.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, here's the thing about this also happening.
Hmm.
Because of this, there has been talk in Scotland to be bringing up another independence referendum. Those of you who don't know, I think it was last year.
Yeah,
they had a vote on whether or not to stay in the UK, and that one was actually pretty close too.
Yeah.
But they decided to stay in it. Also, the members of Sinn Féin have said that they're going to bring up a referendum to put for an Irish reunification and to also leave the UK.
Yeah.
There are people now in Texas, part of the Texas Nationalist Movement, who are saying that they want to secede, create their own country. And I would say, okay.
Yeah.
Because if it was within my power, I would put everything below Houston. I would put everything below Austin and give it back to Mexico. But
yeah,
and they can take Arizona while they're at it. So yeah, this is basically going to. This is it, the way that the world media is making it sound. Sounds like it's going to be this big chain reaction. And yet they have done such a terrible job of communicating what this actually means.
Yeah.
If you didn't realize, the pound, the worth of the pound basically tumbled pretty much the morning this was announced.
Yeah.
The Dow Jones took like a 500%, like took like a 500 point hit.
Yeah, I think I saw it's here in the U.S. the conversion rate is at a low that's one of the lowest since...
In almost 30 years.
No, in like 300 years. It's like 1791. It's like one of the lowest rates we've seen in 200, 300 years.
Yikes.
Damn, that is... So...
And that's just over something that's not exactly permanent yet.
No. I mean, it's not even... Again, it was a non-binding referendum. Yeah. It's not even... You know, they might end up having another one because the vote was that close.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, the Asian markets, like, they were showing, like, all of them are down on this. Like, everywhere's like, man, fuck all y'all.
Yeah. And there's, you know, a bunch of people, like, who voted for were now regretting that. So it's like...
Oh, yes.
I didn't know what I was voting for.
It's like, yeah, you know... not being part of a union is a lot of work.
Yeah. And it's not like the EU is an it's not like the UK is an empire anymore, guys.
No.
So let me see if I can look at some of the stuff.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot there. It's a little bit of an article and
quote, "My vote I didn't think was going to matter too much because I thought we were just going to remain."
Well, you voted against it because you thought there would be enough to outdo your vote?
Yeah. What? It's like, this is like Donald Trump-level logic here.
Yeah. Ugh. Those of you don't know, the total votes, it was like leave was like 17,410,742. Remain was 16,141,241. That is a very close vote.
Yeah.
Another person said, "The David Cameron resignation has blown me away, to be honest. I think the period of uncertainty we're going to have for the next few months has been magnified, so I'm quite worried." I forgot to mention that, Prime Minister David Cameron actually resigned this morning. And I'm surprised it was this that finally brought him down.
It's like, okay, this? After, like, all the other crap that's gone on with him?
Including including the dead pig sodomy. I mean, this is the one that finally brought him down.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a thing here that shows, like, the voting results in various parts of the UK.
By the borough. Like,
like, Scotland is voting in 1.6 to 1 million.
Mm-hmm.
Everything south of that is voting out except for London.
Yeah, London was like over 60%.
It's like 2.2 to 1.5. Or else it's kind of pretty close, but voting to get out.
Yeah. Also, they did graphs on sort of like the generational gap between those who voted to stay in and those who voted to stay out, and they found that people who were 60 and over actually wanted to go out.
Yeah.
But if they were 30 and under, they were actually, like, almost majority wanted to stay in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's, like, other quotes here from people. I was very disappointed about the result. Even though I voted to leave this morning, I woke up and the reality did actually hit me. If I had the opportunity to vote again, it would be to stay.
Well, you'll get your opportunity.
Probably within, I would not be surprised if they end up setting up another referendum in the next few months.
Yeah.
And it's like, I personally voted leave, believing these lies, and I regret more than anything. Hmm. I feel genuinely robbed of my vote. So there were apparently like vans and such going around saying they spend £350 million per week, the EU, that would be savings they would be able to spend on the NHS, which seems like probably a huge lie, especially since one of the leaders of the parties that was going for leaving admitted that
the
it was UKIP. A lie. Yeah, they lied. Admitted they lied.
Yeah, the UKIP. For those of you who don't know what the UKIP is, that's the United Kingdom Independence Party.
Yeah.
They are basically the British equivalent of the Tea Party here in the United States, except they're their own political party. Yeah. And, yeah, they are pretty much, but by all intents and purposes, they are basically a far-right party.
Yeah.
But they just, they do a kind of semi-competent job of being able to hide it. Note that I said semi-competent because semi-competence basically means you only kind of suck.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that basically it's now come out that Nigel Farage, the guy who was the leader of that particular party, basically said that he wants to completely privatize the NHS.
Yeah, because that's gone so well for America.
Yeah, if he's up for election again, that's probably going to be the one that tanks him. Because the NHS is wildly popular in the UK.
Yeah.
For all its flaws. And it does have its flaws.
Yeah.
You can mostly blame the Tories for that one. But, yeah, so, of course, also on top of the UKIP, you also had groups like, you know, the Britain First, which, for those who don't know, that was the group that Thomas Mayer was a part of. Also, you know, various other sort of right-wing groups, most of them pretty openly neo-fascist. The National Front, for example. Well, the BNP, technically, British National Party, which is what the National Front calls itself now.
Yes.
Also, the EDL, that's the English Defense League. Yeah, those guys are real assholes. But the good thing is that our brothers and sisters over in England know what to do when you're confronted by a bunch of far-right assholes. Get off your ass and bash the fash.
Yep. Yeah. You only make this mistake once.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it is really fun because, see, here's the thing. Here in the U.S., they are literally painting it as if the U.K. itself has completely voted to leave the EU.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. It was a referendum that was non-binding. The voting was really close. More than likely, they're going to have another referendum in a few months. And even then, they've still got, like, 2 years to deal with this shit anyway.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and the worst part is all the freaking GOP assholes who know almost nothing about the situation.
Oh, like Trump?
Yeah, like Trump.
Over in Scotland and thinks Scotland's the one that voted for this?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Scotland made the right move. Like, what?
And then Sarah Palin, who, you know, applauded it and said now it was time for the U.S. to lead the United Nations. I'm like, bitch, that's not how this works.
No. You're not sure what reality you're in. You're not in the current one.
It's not even the two the two organizations don't even operate the same way. They both have completely different objectives.
Yeah.
I mean, the EU is largely an economic thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and I have the excuse of this not being our country.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily understand it because the way it's being portrayed to us is like a national election in November.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is a final decision.
Yeah, we all made the effort to actually research what the shit means.
Unlike Fox News and everybody else covering it, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And CNN, for that matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Freaking. God, it's. You know, that one word, non-biting, it's important.
Yeah, it kind of, you know, changes things a little bit. Yeah. And it's kind of also sad that a lot of people in the UK aren't aware of how it works either. So yeah. that's kind of a
again,
kind of
I blame the Tories.
Mm-hmm. So
By the way, end on this topic, we're going to tell you who's our asshole of the week.
Yeah, we might as well get that out of the way while we're at it.
Our asshole of the week, it's the global far right who cheered the Brexit victory, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Frickin' Front National in France. Frickin' Marie Le Pen. her gaggle of neo-Nazi idiots. Frickin' Golden Dawn in Greece. You know what, let's just take a look at this cavalcade of losers. That's what these assholes are, they're losers. Let's see, who else we had? Golden Dawn. There was freaking Geert Wilders from the Netherlands. I freaking hate that guy. freaking Beatrix von Storch from the MEP, which is basically which is for the Alternative for Deutschland, which is basically a very poorly disguised Nazi party.
Yeah.
Not
really fooling anyone, guys.
The Sweden Democrats, which is a far right group in Sweden.
Not actually democratic.
Yeah. The Danish People's Party. For those of you who don't know, Chris just put up a picture from Fox News saying UK votes to leave you in. No, they didn't.
No.
That is not happening.
Not the same thing.
It was a referendum. It's non-binding, and it was too close to be. Even if it was binding, it was too close to take effect yet. It was.
Yeah.
So we got to do a little bit of research before you post stuff to the TV.
And you had Golden Dawn, those souls.
Yeah.
Italy. Let's see. God, it was just. There was a bunch of idiots over here in the U.S. who said stupid shit, and I was more than willing to put them up, especially Sarah frickin' Palin. But if there's one thing you can at least give Sarah Palin, it's that she doesn't admire Adolf Hitler. So
at least she's got that going for her.
So, you know, you can be the biggest asshole in the world, but if you... But that still will not compare to someone who admires Adolf Hitler. So,
yeah.
That was fucking Fox News.
Yeah.
That's painful.
Yeah.
All right, well.
At least we're not ending on that anymore.
Like we've said, our policy since the last week to here on out is that we're going to go ahead and get the heavy stuff out of the way first, because life's too short to go to bed angry. So,
yeah.
With that out of the way, it's time for the nonsense.
Yeah.
So, first things first, It's a topic I've kind of wanted to talk about, and we'll probably talk about it again more than once in future episodes. 80s hair metal.
Oh.
This is just such a fun topic because there's just so much great material. It's like, about. Yeah. And it's like a lot of these bands that we're going to talk about have some pretty decent music, but it's just like their stage presence is just so ridiculous that you just wonder what?
Yeah. Some of these bands you now will hear pretty regularly on classic rock stations.
Yeah.
Some of them pretty much sank into obscurity.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. But so I guess we'll start with sort of the origins of the whole hair metal thing. So I've said before that I think the 1970s was the best decade for rock music.
Yeah.
Because of the sheer diversity of it, and also because of the production values for the stage shows, also because it was also sort of the birth of indie music as well.
Yeah.
And as far as sort of the hair metal thing is concerned, there were basically four bands from that era that probably had the biggest influence on the whole hair metal thing. It was Aerosmith, Kiss, the New York Dolls,
mm-hmm.
and I guess Led Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. And then basically what happened is there was this Finnish band. There were these two bands. One of them was from Finland. One of them was the UK. The first one was a band called Hanoi Rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Hanoi Rocks was basically a group. Music-wise, they were very much a heavily influenced by the New York Dolls. Well, with a big dose of Aerosmith as well. Basically, they were to describe them as, you know how in the late part of the 80s you had, you know, guys like LA Guns and Faster Pussycat.
Yeah.
You know, those sort of what they call sleazed rock bands.
Yeah.
Well, Hanoi Rocks was basically the founder of that whole thing. This is a picture of them from the early 80s. And, oh, shit, hold on, wrong picture. Hold on, I gotta...
Not quite looking for it, but...
Yeah, hold on. This should do it. There we go.
That's better.
Yeah. And, obviously, probably the big thing that they helped inspire was the big hair.
Yeah.
Well, there's a reason their hair was that big. It's because they didn't shower for days on end, and so their hair got so greasy it eventually just naturally poofed up.
Yeah.
Funny enough, this band would have probably become really big if it weren't for the fact that their drummer died in a car accident with Vince Neil, who survived.
Of Motley Crue.
Yeah. The other band that is generally considered to have sort of started it was a UK band called Wrathchild. That was one of the sort of lesser known groups from the new wave of British heavy metal movement.
Yeah.
Here's a picture of them from their debut album. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can see it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing was, these guys were actually more heavily influenced by, like, Alice Cooper and Kiss. They called themselves UK's best shock rock band.
Yeah.
So, concurrent with sort of all this that was happening, there was a thing going on, as I mentioned earlier, in the UK, which was called the New Wave of British Heavy Metal. And this is where you started seeing bands like Iron Maiden, Def Leppard, Motorhead, Saxon, you know, Angel Witch, Witchfinder General. A lot of witch names in these bands for some reason. Witchhammer, yeah. Satan, Satanic Rites, Venom, personal favorite of mine. And then there was also some bands, some established bands like Motorhead and Judas Priest that kind of got lumped into it, because this was also kind of the time when they actually started to become really famous.
Yeah.
You could also kind of put, even though they were technically American, they were actually an American band, you could also put Twisted Sister into this because they first made it really big in England.
Yeah.
So what happened is all of this sort of started to make its way over to the U.S., and then all of a sudden, there were a couple of really big bands that started to come out of what's now called the Sunset Strip in Los Angeles. One of the things you find is the L.A. scene is sort of like the L.A. scene is basically the ground zero for the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, where Motley Crue came from.
Yeah, Motley Crue actually started in 81. They're actually literally one of the first. There was also Dokken from Los Angeles. That was also from L.A. There was Kix from Maryland. Kix is actually, I think, one of the most criminally underrated bands of that era. Because, you know, first of all, they were around for like a long time, and their sound reflects it. Because you can hear some of their early stuff and how experimental they were. There was also a band that kind of came out and became really popular in the tail end of the 70s, Van Halen.
Oh, yeah. A couple people might have heard of them.
Yeah, Van Halen kind of set the standard. Or if you've ever seen, you know, their concerts from like 78 and 79.
Yeah.
You know, just with David Lee Roth with his, you know, his spandex and assless chaps and his showmanship and you know, Eddie with his big hair and all that. And then you would get bands like one of the bands that kind of sort of one of the first bands from this era that really hit it big. And when you think of like really big pop metal that came out in the early 80s, you usually think like Def Leppard, Def Leppard Pyromania.
Yeah.
Which is a great album.
Oh, yeah.
I got it.
I should probably try to track down a copy on vinyl.
Yeah. But actually, the first band of this era that really made it big was a now kind of obscure LA group called Quiet Riot.
Yeah, I like them.
Quiet Riot came out. Well, Quiet Riot actually had been around since the late 70s. Those of you who are Ozzy Osbourne fans, some of you may remember his late great guitarist, Randy Rhoads.
Yeah.
He was originally in Quiet Riot. And he's actually on their first two albums. Which were known as Quiet Riot and Quiet Riot 2. Then in 1980,
it was a big thing about numbering albums back then.
For some reason. Then in 1983, they released their American debut, because up to that point, they'd mostly been doing stuff in England and in Japan.
Yeah.
1983, they released an album called Metal Health.
That's a great, great one.
That album was freaking everywhere back in the day. That album was massive. They were the first heavy metal band to have a top five, to have a hit song in the top five of the Billboard charts, which was the Slade cover, Come On, Feel the Noise. They also had a really awesome top 40 hit called Metal Health, mostly known as Bang Your Head.
Yeah.
Bang your head! That album actually went number one. It went straight up to number one with a bullet. It actually replaced the Police. Their album Synchronicity.
Yeah.
For the number one spot. Went on to sell 6 million copies.
Yeah.
They even went and supported Black Sabbath on tour. This damn album, basically because of its amazing success, is when all these other bands started to come out.
Yeah.
Good example. another sort of LA staple, Rat.
Mm-hmm.
That's with two T's.
Yeah.
Rat is one of those bands who, back in the early, Rat had been around since 1982, and they actually released their self-titled debut, I think, right around the time that Metal Health came out.
Yeah.
And then they came out with Out of the Cellar, which is mm-hmm. where that song Round and Round comes from.
Yep.
Yeah. Rat was one of the glam bands that had a very clear inspiration from the new wave of British metal.
Yeah.
Because they had the whole twin guitar thing going from like Judas Priest.
Yeah.
And they also took they also kind of helped codify the whole look of what the LA band was. They were one of the first to do the spandex and the big hair and all the makeup.
Yeah.
You know, the pyrotechnics, all that stuff. But, of course, from that era, there is one band that rules above them all. Motley Crue.
Yeah.
With their 1984 smash album, Shout at the Devil.
Yeah.
Which is an awesome freaking album.
Yeah, there's not one bad song on that album. It's just cover to cover awesomeness.
Even the introduction and the interlude is good.
Yeah.
that album is, that's also the when right around the time when the heavy metal Moral Panic came into existence.
Yeah.
Because Shout at the Devil, when it was originally released, basically had a big old black pentagram on the cover.
Yeah.
Whenever you see it, like, in stores now, it's that sort of portrait cover, which just has, like, all four members and their individual portraits sort of 2x2, you know, kind of like, you know, Beatles Let It Be style.
Yeah.
But before that, it was straight up a giant pentagram. Yeah. And, you know, the album was called Shout at the Devil. It had it on the cover. The song was all about shouting at the devil. You know, there was the interlude called God Bless the Children of the Beast. There was the freaking apocalyptic opening monologue.
Yeah.
You know, it was
cover of Helter Skelter.
Yeah, the cover of Helter Skelter, which kind of got them in trouble later on.
Yeah.
Oh, and, you know, and there was that song Bastard, which was basically really violent about killing a potential rapist.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had the videos for, like, Looks at one of my favorite music videos of all time, just because of how goddamn cheesy it is. The video for Looks That Kill.
Yeah.
Which, for those of you who've never seen it, first of all, this is back when they were, at least until Theater of Pain came out, this is when Motley Crue was, like, at their glammiest, without looking like total pussies. all the leather, the chains, the tight bright red spandex, and basically they apparently lived in some sort of weird post-apocalyptic world where they have a bunch of women in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
And then this dominatrix superhero character with like a gun thing on her hand and a spider web shield, she shoots at Tommy Lee's drum, but wait, Tommy Lee fires a pentagram from his bass drum. She shields it.
Mm.
It's super effective.
You see, Tommy Lee should have double bassed there. Probably would have gone better for him.
Yeah, probably. and so that came out, and then, of course, Pyromania came out around the same time, too. Yeah. So, like, in 83, 84, heavy metal literally, for the first time in America, exploded.
Yeah.
That was also, I think, the same year that Judas Priest came out with Screaming for Vengeance.
Yeah.
Or I think it was
I think Screaming for Vengeance was 84, yeah.
I think it was Defenders of the Faith, actually. Mm. That came out in 84. I think Screaming for Vengeance came out in 83. But anyway, so all of a sudden metal was now a thing. And also I'm pretty sure this was the year that Metallica released their first album, wasn't it?
Kill 'Em All was 83.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
that was close. But and the thing was, at the same time as this was happening, there was another thing going on, the AOR hard rock stuff, where it was basically, you know, pop rock bands with metal tendencies.
Yeah.
Biggest example, Night Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
Night Ranger came out with Midnight Madness in 1983. And that album has everything, has songs like, well, the one everyone knows, Sister Christian.
Yeah.
Also stuff like When You Close Your Eyes, I think You Can Still Rock in America.
Mm.
I want to say Don't Tell Me You Love Me, but that was actually, I think, the previous album, Dawn Patrol. Oh, yeah, and this was also 1984 was the year that Stay Hungry from Twisted Sister came out.
Yeah.
I love that album so goddamn much.
Mm.
That was that album is awesome. It was also the same year that, you know, not only did that album come out, but the video for We're Not Gonna Take It premiered on MTV.
Yeah.
Which was a relatively new thing at the time.
Mm. Yeah, that was back when they actually did music videos on MTV.
Yes, believe it or not, MTV stands for Music Television.
Mm-hmm.
But, so all these bands came out. And then in around 85, 86 is when the pride of New Jersey finally made it big.
Yeah.
Bon Jovi with Slippery When Wet.
Yeah. I just found a copy of that album, by the way.
Yeah. That album for me is kind of so-so.
Hmm.
You know, and that's partly due to the fact that almost all of that album is horribly overplayed on classic rock.
Yeah.
You know, when those songs came out, they were awesome. But when you start to, when you turn on the radio and it's basically played every 3 hours.
Yeah, it kind of gets old after a
while. Then you had some of the more obscure bands that started to come out around this time, like Autograph.
Hmm.
With their Sign In, Please. Autograph, those of you who don't know, if you're a fan of Grand Theft Auto Vice City, you definitely heard them. It was a song called Turn Up the Radio.
Yep.
Turn up the radio! And it also...
You know, not trying to be like Def Leppard in any way possible.
Nope. Hmm. They also had some more, they also had bands that premiered around this time that would become successful towards the tail end of the 80s, like Great White, for example. Mm. And then some bands that never made it, even though they sadly should have, because they were good, Black and Blue. Mm. Little known fact, Black and Blue, despite being a quote-unquote hair metal band, actually debuted on the same compilation disc that Metallica debuted on.
Yeah.
So next to their song, you also had Metallica's Hit the Lights. also, Dawkins released their second album around this time. And this was also the time when a old standby from the late 70s, Kiss, made their huge comeback with Animal Eyes. Well, they had released an album before then called Lick It Up, which that was the album where they took off the makeup. And we all got to see what they actually looked like underneath it. And we all ran from the hills in terror because, dear God, is Gene Simmons ugly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that Animal Eyes, I have that album. It's actually really good. I love it. But really, the sort of, as we, oh, there was one other band I forgot to mention because they represent a really unusual trend in metal, especially glam metal, in the 80s. Striper.
That I have not heard of.
Striper was a Christian metal band.
That might be why I've never heard of them.
But they were also a hair metal band, and, well, hold on. Let me just show you what they looked like. Just prepare yourselves, because your eyes may not be able to comprehend it. Because this look was literally their whole shtick, you know, other than the Jesus thing.
Okay. Okay. That's about all I got.
Yep. Yeah, so Striper was, yes, a Christian metal band. And their whole Striper name actually is sort of a reference to some Bible verse. I can't remember. It's through your stripes we are healed. Yeah. It's the stripes, of course, referencing the, you know, the whipping on Jesus's back.
Yeah.
They also took it literally in their.
Yeah, they basically dressed up like glam rock bumblebees early. Yeah. And it was actually, there have been people who said they would go back in the day to a Striper concert and have to leave because of vertigo, because there was so much yellow and black stripe shit everywhere. Like, it wasn't just like, yeah, it wasn't like just their, you know, their costumes, even their stages had all the.
Yeah, it's like a construction site and everything.
Yeah, it's actually, I think I can find a better image than that because it got pretty insane.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, though, despite the whole they're really cruddy Christian rock bands, because again, this is, let's face it, most Christian bands can't write a song worth a shit. They actually were great musicians, and their music was genuinely pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Despite the image. And they had really good production, too. So what happened is, once the whole glam thing took off, and it started to really take off in 86, which was the year when Slippery When Wet came out.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, that album especially was a massive hit. It actually sold twice as many copies as Metal Health did.
Hmm.
I think it's actually sold more copies than Pyromania. It actually became the first hard rock album that spawned 3 top 10 singles. 2 of them actually were number 1. And so all of a sudden everybody was looking for similar bands, and then there was a band that came out of Europe that was called Europe.
Yeah.
And they came out with their famous album, The Final Countdown.
Yeah.
Which includes the famous hit song,
The Final Countdown.
Of Arrested Development fame.
Yep. Mm. Of Arrested Development and a bunch of TV commercials.
South Park.
South Park. Metal Gear Solid 5. Is this song going to end up being like the next Don't Stop Believing?
Probably.
Is this going to be the song that's basically been dead for a couple decades and then all of a sudden it's just going to show up again everywhere?
Yeah, it's already starting.
Yeah. So the funny thing is about The Final Countdown is, as fun an album as it is, it's also a massive goddamn sellout. Because if you've ever heard of the stuff they released before then, they were actually more of like a hard rock version of Yes.
Yeah.
So with that, this was also, 86 was the year that Striper actually became a major hit because they released an album called To Hell with the Devil, and it actually had a top 40 hit in there. Then Pennsylvania came in, both of these bands, there was one band that I also forgot to mention, Wasp.
Hmm.
Do you remember Wasp?
Yeah.
Wasp was basically everything that they made rumors about of Motley Crue, Wasp actually did.
Yeah.
Including having a single called Animal Fuck Like a Beast.
Yeah.
And having a stage show that Motley Crue would kill for, everything from, you know, chopping up meat, drinking blood from a skull, sacrificing a woman who was topless, throwing raw meat out into the audience, having a cod piece that had a rotary saw blade, which he later then replaced with a Roman candle.
Yeah.
And so all this came around, and then there was sort of the bands that would came out, two in particular. One of them is Cinderella, which, despite having a really glammy look, I think is actually a band that's kind of underrated, because they were actually a really good band.
Yeah,
really good heavy blues rock type band that just also happened to have a really glammy look. There was also bands that started coming out around this time there was also some bands that had been in the metal scene for a while that suddenly became huge. Good example, Scorpions.
Yeah.
Not the Scorpions, it's just Scorpions.
Yeah.
They had that album, they had that song, Rock You Like a Hurricane, Still Loving You, Big City Nights.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Really controversial album covers too.
Yeah.
Including a particular album they released called Virgin Killer, which...
That didn't go over so well with the conservative folks.
Well, it didn't really go over well with anybody. I mean, the chick was underage, was clearly prepubescent. But, and also Aerosmith made their huge comeback right around this time. Their album Permanent Vacation, which is that album is really where they just became a massive success again.
And they did that in the 90s.
Yeah, they did it again in the 90s too. And the weird thing is, it's funny because I didn't learn until I was a teenager that Aerosmith had been around in the 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, not only had they been around in the 70s, they were massive in the 70s.
Yeah.
They were one of the top touring bands in the country.
Yeah.
They
just kind of went away.
Yeah. And then also around this time is when Van Halen entered into the Van Hagar era.
Yeah.
With a 5150.
Yep.
They had previously put out a pretty good album called 1984. That was the last album. That was actually the last album David Lee Roth would be in before their most recent one.
Which I would rather forget about. Because that last album that David Lee Roth was on is not very good.
Yeah. and of course, that 1984 album, it had, Panama, Jump, I'll Wait, a bunch of other songs. Pot for Teacher, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
I still think that Jump sounds a lot like the main castle room from Super Mario 64.
Yeah, could kind of see the similarity.
Yeah, I mean the setting for the synthesizer is almost exactly the same.
Any of you guys heard of Nitro?
I'm actually getting to them.
Yeah.
And yes, I do know about Nitro, and trust me, I'm getting to them. And then of course there was probably the biggest punching bag of the late 80s as far as heavy metal was concerned. Poison.
Yeah.
Poison came out in 1987 with Look What the Cat Dragged In. And that album had, it had Talk Dirty to Me, I Won't Forget You. In hindsight, it's not really a bad album. Pretty enjoyable rock album, but...
It's Poison.
Yeah, it's Poison. I mean, these guys basically became a massive punching bag in the rock community. These guys were... Poison was to the late 80s what Nickelback is today.
Yeah.
And that they're not really
good music, but
they make their music's okay, but
just image not so great anymore.
Yeah. And then by the time Poison made it massive, the whole scene just became extremely oversaturated. Just these bands just started popping up left and right. A lot of these bands people don't even remember. You have obviously the big band that came out of it that sort of became a legend is Guns N' Roses. Yeah. They made their debut in 87. It was that was when Appetite for Destruction came out. Great album.
Yeah, great album.
It's a good album.
Pretty much from start to finish. It's
yeah, there's really not a bad song on that album. It was also around this time Alice Cooper made his comeback too. He released Constrictor, Raise Your Fist and Yell. And then, of course, 1989, he released Trash, which had Poison on it, which is, and he would eventually, in the early 90s, he would follow that up with Hey Stupid, which is actually an album I really love.
Yeah.
Because it has the song on there that introduced me to Alice Cooper. Can you take a wild guess what it was?
Not really.
It was the song that was in the Wayne's World movie. Feed My Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And so that happened.
He was always great with theatrics in his shows.
Yeah, he's pretty much the founder of that whole thing.
Yeah.
Pretty much all the bands that came after it sort of took their thing from him.
Yeah, Kiss got it from them.
Yeah. This was also the year, this was also around, I think it was 1987, 1988, that Whitesnake made it huge with their self-titled album, Whitesnake.
Yeah.
I have that album. I actually like it.
Yeah, it's a good album.
Well, it's got some amazing production.
Yeah.
It's got some of the best guitar sounds I've ever heard in an album.
Steve Vai.
No, actually, it was John Sykes.
John Sykes?
Yeah, John Sykes was on that album. He, of course, David Coverdale, those who don't know, David Coverdale is the band leader and the singer. He basically fired the whole band when they went on tour. So, Steve Vai ended up joining him on that tour. And he's also one of the guys you see in the videos.
Yeah.
Of course, that album had freaking, Here I Go Again, Is This Love? Some more obscure, Still of the Night, which is a freaking amazing song. Because David Coverdale has an amazing voice.
Yeah.
And just, I love the guitar work on that song. It's just... Oh, and there was also some more obscure songs like Crying in the Rain and Straight for the Heart. But the thing is, Whitesnake pretty much became the epitome of that sort of big hair arena rock pop metal scene. Out of that, you started seeing bands like L.A. Guns, for example, and Faster Pussycat, the sort of more sleazy type rock bands. Also, Def Leppard ended up releasing a second hit album in the late 80s with Hysteria.
Yeah.
Whether or not it is up to the quality of Pyromania is debatable, but it still had a massive number of hits.
Personally, I think Pour Some Sugar on Me is like one of the most overrated songs ever.
It's basically over glorified stripper song.
Yeah, Sweet Cherry Pie, those sorts of songs.
Yeah, which, by the way, I'm fixing to get to that. All of a sudden, in the late 80s, the whole L.A. metal scene just sort of became unbelievably oversaturated. All these bands came out. All of them looked the same. A lot of them sounded the same. And pretty much all of them, when they got a record deal, there was a formula to them. They'd come out with big anthemic rocker, and then there was the power ballad that would come after it.
Yeah.
And usually it was the power ballad that would chart better.
Yeah.
And then the band basically would sink into obscurity after that.
Yeah.
So here's some songs, a lot of people here who, some bands that were pretty popular in the late 80s, nobody remembers any of these. So Brittany Fox.
I remember her. Yeah.
Who were from Philadelphia. Yeah. Their big hit then was Girl School. There was Winger from New York.
Beavis and Butthead made fun of them all the time.
Oh, God. Beavis and Butthead took the piss out of them all the freaking time. Yeah. You know the video that Metallica put out for Wherever I May Roam?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see that they have Kip Winger's portrait on a dartboard in the green room. And honestly enough, it's kind of a shame because Kip Winger is a really good musician and
yeah.
a fantastic front man, and he kind of gets a lot more shit than he deserved. Because he, you know, that first Winger album is actually really good. Surprisingly so. Let's see. Some other more obscure bands. Danger Danger from New York. They had two hit songs, both of which coincidentally kept up the same word said twice thing. The first one was called Naughty Naughty. The other one was called Bang Bang. Some other bands, Dangerous Toys from Austin, Texas. That was also around, they had another band of a similar vein that came out from, I think, Alabama called Jackal. Basically, these were sort of hair metal influenced bands that also had a big southern rock tinge to them.
Yeah.
Jackal famously had their novelty song Lumberjack, which featured a chainsaw solo.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. they're actually a pretty solid band, but that one song pretty much labeled them. What else we had? We had a Slaughter from Las Vegas and Firehouse. These bands were huge. Slaughter especially. That album Stick It To Ya. That freaking album was massive. You don't know Slaughter. Slaughter's original lead singer, the singer of the band, John Slaughter, was originally the lead singer for the Vinnie Vincent Invasion, which was the band that the guitar player that replaced Ace Frehley in Kiss when he quit the band was a guy named Vinnie Vincent. And after he left Kiss, he formed his own band, which was the Vinnie Vincent Invasion. They're pretty much only saved by Slaughter's voice, because Vinnie Vincent is a shitty guitar player. Not because he doesn't know how to play the instrument. He knows how to play the instrument, but his ego is so damn big that he overplays everything. There's a song they had called Boys Are Gonna Rock.
Yeah.
Just listen to the solo, not even the solo, the regular riff to that song is so overdone and so unmelodic in just every way possible. It's ridiculous. Let's see, what else we have? We had Warrant, who released Dirty Rotten Filthy Stinking Rich in 1989. That album had Down Boys, Heaven. Warrant kind of became another one of those punching bags as well, because
after Cherry Pie, it's like
I mentioned Firehouse and all that, and then some point in between 1989 and 1990, all the bands decided, hey, it would be a great idea if we unplugged our guitars. I completely blame Bon Jovi for this. So basically, a couple of things happened between 1988 and 1992. The first thing that happened was a movie, a documentary that came out in 1988 called The Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, The Metal Years. If you've never seen this movie, you will walk away thinking, God, that whole scene is filled with nothing but a bunch of drunken, misogynistic ass clowns. It was just, it's a bunch of bands. Some of them were actually pretty good. Megadeth actually makes an appearance in this movie. They're actually the last band to play. Also, Lizzie Borden, which I talked about earlier, actually is the first band to play in this album. And then they have the bands that never made it, like Seduce and London. which, as you don't know, London is actually the band that a lot of other successful bands of that era got their start in. That's the band Nikki Sixx was in before he joined Motley Crue. Yeah. It's also the band that Slash was in before he went start to join Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
And so another reason was basically the power ballad. The power ballad, when it was big, was almost a surefire hit. But eventually it got so oversaturated, and you started, you know, you had bands like Mr. Big. Do you remember Mr. Big?
I do, yeah.
Mr. Big was basically a super group of a bunch of other dudes that got together and started a band. They put out a band. They had a song called Be With You, which was basically an acoustic ballad. You also started singing. Yeah, we'll jump to EGM. I'm almost finished, by the way. So after that, what happened is, of course, 1992, Nirvana's Nevermind went on.
Yeah.
We came out, and, well, that was actually 91. And basically, it just destroyed the scene. Just, just in a way that they would, if this was anything else, they would call it a war crime. It was, it just, boom, all these old bands in this oversaturated, overdone genre just freaking, just blew up overnight. Just all of them, just boom. You know, just it's like, as Tom Petty famously said, they took them out like wheat in a field. it wasn't even fair. So, but probably the band of the whole hair metal era that probably is the most infamous for just its extremity and just taking the whole look and taking it to its illogical extreme was a little band called Nitro.
Yeah. Because, you know, one electric guitar is not enough.
Two electric guitars are not enough.
No, we got to have one guitarist has to have four of them.
Oh, yeah. That's right, folks. The band is called Nitro. The video for the song that we're talking about is called Freight Train. Yeah. You know what? Screw it. I'm going to go get that one picture of them, and we're going to put it up as a link
in the show notes.
In the show notes, because we have to.
Yeah.
It's from the cover of a photography book called American Hair Metal. And, hold on, I got a view image. Because actually, you know what? This one's better.
Yeah.
This one's a lot better. Just put this in the show notes. This is just how ridiculous this band looked. And they were completely 100% serious, too. That's the best part.
Yeah, they just went, you know, they went with it and just owned it. Yeah.
Just fucking hell, look at that hair.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's...
And there's like, stories of Jim Gillette, like, actually being able to break glass.
He can.
Yeah.
Because he actually has the most epic metal scream ever.
Yeah.
In fact, he probably became kind of an internet meme in and of himself because of that famous clip of him from his vocal coaching video that he did.
Yeah.
Then you got the bass player way over here on the left. Just freaking look at that. There are actually pictures of this band where he's in there where his hair is so thick and big that he has no eyes. No, really, I'm not joking. Look. Look.
Yeah.
Look at this shit. See, he has no eyes. Just none.
Yeah.
Despite, however, the really silliness of their image, they did have an amazing freaking guitarist.
Yeah.
Michelangelo Battio. He's the guy with the four guitar.
Yeah.
And the quad guitar, as he called it. Mm. And there's a reason he was able to get quad guitar and get away with it. because he's that damn talented. Totally yes. Played every single one of them. Sometimes yeah. Two at a time.
To see that guy play, it's like he's like a spider. He's all over the place, and it's amazing to watch how fast that guy is.
Yeah.
So, he has some solo stuff too now.
Yeah, he's actually his solo stuff's pretty good too. But we're running a little long here, so we're going to go ahead and kind of wrap this up with our final topic. Some of this other stuff we will gladly sort of. Are you sure? You guys? We don't want to do any of these other things.
Yeah, I mean, we're already at like 2 hours here.
All right. Well, we'll.
May as well.
I'll go ahead and just take these out then in the show notes.
Yeah. Move Adult Swim to next week, I guess.
Yeah. So we wanted to end the show on yet another episode of Gamer Mag Remembrances. And this time we're going to talk about a particular magazine that actually holds pretty closely to my heart. Electronic Gaming Monthly.
Yeah. Oh, and there you can get them on archive.org.
Just like we did with GamePro.
Yeah.
It's mostly all 90s issues they have.
Yeah.
This one you can read is March 2000. There before the PS2 and where they're wondering if the Xbox is going to be a real thing.
All right. So, hold on. I need to get back to where the archive was for all of these because there was the first issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly I ever picked up. Hold on. I'm trying to see. Where's the thing on here where you're able to go back to the archive?
Should be there.
All right, there we go. That's what I was looking for. Okay. I'm wanted to see if they've got the issue I was talking about here. Yeah, here's a bunch of them. I remember some of these, too. Was it the... All right. You know what?
I think one of the first big ones I got for this magazine was the Crazy Taxi issue, which they had the big yellow Crazy Taxi logo on the front of it, which is great.
All right. It's issue number 64. Which I'm trying to see. Do they have that one here? 64, 73, 67. God damn it, where are you? 4. 66.
Yeah, when I went binge reading on GamePros after last week.
Here it is, found it.
Found an issue in 96 which had an advert for Video Game Spot, which was the spinoff of GameSpot that Jeff Gerstmann worked for. Where they were basically doing tons of reviews for console stuff. But they getting rolled into GameSpot later on.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, they do not have a preview one for the 64 one, but hold on, let me go ahead and...
I have some stuff you can download for it.
Yeah, they do. They got it in a couple of different things. They got like a torrent and a CBR. If you got a CBR, you can go ahead and do that one. The old Crash Bandicoot. But the one I'm talking about was issue number 64. This was the first one I ever got, and it had the Sega's 32X version of Doom on the cover, and this freaking issue was huge, and I mean that literally. This thing was like 400-something pages.
Actually have like one issue a year that was huge.
Actually, it was 398 pages to be exact. But basically, this issue was... Until I finally got rid of my video game magazine collection... which was a few years ago, this was the oldest magazine I had in the collection. This thing had reviews for Donkey Kong Country, The Lion King, Shaq Fu. Which, by the way, is coming back.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like it sucks.
Yeah. They actually gave it a pretty middle of the road.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Even Sushi X himself is thinking, like, why was this made as a fighting game in the first place?
How was this made?
Some other things, Booger Man, Genesis, Virtual Bart, the Animaniacs game, Mickey Mania. Who here remembers that game?
I do.
That was a Mickey Mouse platformer. It was actually pretty good. Oh, they had a whole section about the King of Fighters 94.
Yeah, that was like right before it came out, I think, and there was building the hype for it.
Yeah, and they basically had a whole sort of thing about all the teams.
Yeah.
You know, you had the, you know, the final, you had the Art of Fighting team, the Fatal Fury team, you had the Korean team, Japanese team. They had the, what they called the Princes of Punch, which was the all-female team. Mm. That was, you know, Mai and Yuri and King, I think.
Yeah.
You had, what was it, the Commando team, which was the three characters from, what was that game?
Fury Warriors.
Yeah. There was also the Chinese team, which had characters from that platformer. I'm forgetting what it was called. Let's see, what else did we have? We had, and they also had Rugal show up, who had his own stage. He actually had an aircraft carrier that you fought on.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else do we have? We had Alien versus Predator for the Atari Jaguar. Oh man.
Yeah, Alien versus Predator. Probably one of the only good games on that system.
Burning Soldier for the 3DO.
That was not one of the good games on that system.
Burn Cycle for the CDI.
That was not one of the good games on that system. I don't think there really were many good games on the CDI.
And also Sonic Triple Trouble for the Game Gear.
Hmm. I never got to play that one.
We also had, we had some Capcom stuff. We had Super Saturday Night Slam Masters.
Hmm.
That was the sequel to Slam Masters.
Yeah,
That
I like that game. It was fun.
Yeah, except this one was more of a traditional fighting game.
Hmm.
They also had the, oh damn, this is DVD players. Man, remember when those things were
a thing?
Yeah, let's make a video game system out of one.
New one.
Oh, God.
The only good game was Tempest 3000.
Let's see, they had some arcade-related stuff. They had the Gundam EX review, which was the Gundam fighting game.
Yeah.
They had the Desert Tank, which was the Desert Tank Simulator.
Yeah.
Also, Virtua Fighter 2.
Mm.
They also had the International Outlook segment, which this was my favorite part of the magazine because this was the first time I was really exposed to the Japanese gaming scene and a lot of these franchises, for that matter. So there was like a G Gundam fighting game, a puzzle action game based on Mobile Suit Gundam. Actually, I think that was the Super Robot series. No, it wasn't. Let's see. Dragon Quest VI. The Double Dragon fighting game for the Neo Geo. The one that was technically based on the movie. But was actually really awesome.
You can get that on PSN.
Also had... Oh, this is the one I was talking about. The Great Battle 4. That was the... Super Robot Shooter, where you basically could play, you know, Mazinger Z, one of the Gundam units.
Mm.
I think Getter Robo was in there too.
Yeah.
And this thing for GTA, they had this thing for GTA too.
Get a free pager with it.
Pagers.
90s.
Yeah.
Let's see, it's also when we got to see the loop. They also had a loop in the third game for the SNES. Also got the Super Tetris. And, of course, it was the first time we got a look at Ridge Racer and Battle Arena Toshinden for the Saturn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and they also had a little thing talking about Snatcher for the Sega CD.
Yeah.
We also got some stuff for Samurai Showdown and Rayman. And then they had a big thing about Sonic 2. Not Sonic 2, I mean Sonic and Knuckles. And that, actually, this was like Mickey Mania, but this was sort of like their features basing around their, you know, stuff like that. They had Cosmic Carnage, Virtua Racing, Metalhead.
Yeah.
Then for the SNES, we had they had a whole feature on Clay Fighter 2, Judgment Clay.
Yeah. Exterminator 2 was pretty big back then, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, duh.
All right. And let's see, what else did we have? We had, the Yogi Bear platformer. No passwords or continues, by the way.
Yeah.
See,
because that's what kids want, really, is like an unfair platformer and a game that they can't finish.
Mm-hmm. They also had Starfleet Academy, the Addams Family Values RPG.
Oy.
The Nickelodeon Guts tie-in game. Clay Fighter Tournament Edition. Oh, and also Final Fight Guy. Let's see, and then as far as Genesis and as far as their Sega stuff was concerned, they got the original Echo and Dolphin. Echo the Dolphin. Zero the Kamikaze Squirrel.
I remember that game. That wasn't actually that bad.
No, it wasn't. It's just it was attached to
kind of generic.
Yeah, it was attached to a really generic franchise anyway. There was the Page Master game.
Yeah.
Who here remembers that movie?
Yeah, I like might have seen it when I was younger. And yeah, probably forgot about it.
Let's see what else we had: Generations Lost, Masked Rider. That's the Kamen Rider related game.
Yeah.
What else did we have? We had Stalker, Android Assault, Lethal Enforcers 2, Starblade. 3DO actually had a version of Magnog and Creed 2.
Yeah. Well, technically, at the time, 3DO was probably the only system, well, aside from the CDI, they'd actually play it properly.
Yeah. They also had a bunch of stuff about the Game Gear versions of the Lion King and the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers game. Yeah, it was a pretty awesome issue. If you go on this sort of archiving site, obviously you can't look at it as a as on the previews, but you can download it for various formats. I've got it. I just downloaded it for CBR.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna take a little trip back into the past. So Electronic Gaming Monthly is one of those. You know, every so often they would put out those big fat editions. The only other one of those types of magazines, the big fat editions, that I got was the Zelda one. Right around in 1997, right around the time before Ocarina of Time was coming out.
Yeah.
And they had like a big Zelda retrospective of all the Zelda games that had come out before then. They even had a tiny little sidebar making small mentions of the CDI Zelda games.
They'd rather not, but they exist. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, they talked about the original Zelda. They talked a bit about Zelda 2, which I forgot. Do you remember back when Zelda 2 first came out that they actually had to delay it once when they were developing it?
Yeah.
And do you remember the excuse they gave?
No.
They said there was a quote-unquote chip shortage.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And then, of course, you also, you know, Link to the Past, you know, Link's, what was the Game Boy game? Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening?
Yeah,
I think it was, which was probably the best Game Boy game ever made, next to Tetris.
Well, there was the two Oracle games, Oracle of Ages and Seasons.
Yeah, like I said, probably the best game ever made. EGM is actually still around, I think, aren't they?
I don't know. Probably.
Yeah, they're under new management.
Yeah. Because
EGMnow.com.
Yeah. best thing about EGM these days is they got probably my favorite internet comedian of all time on it, on staff.
Oh, yeah.
Sean Baby. Sean Baby for EGM, they basically gave him the job of reviewing, quote-unquote, the worst tie-in games they could give him. So basically lots of Barbie, lots of, you know, lots of Disney shit, lots of Olsen Twins.
Yeah, I can see that that wouldn't, that'd make for great comedic value, but probably not so great for an actual review, but
yeah,
who cares?
Well,
one of the things I liked about EGM, though, was they had a, their reviews were, like, really short, but they were, like, multiple people.
Yeah, usually what they would do for a game is they would put out a, they're actually, now to think about it, their review system actually really reminds me of Famitsu's.
Yeah.
It was basically four people per game.
Yeah, I think that's what they were going for.
And basically each person would give their own personal view and personal score, and then all the scores would be tallied up, and they'd give the end rating at the bottom. Yeah. It was probably one of the best features because it meant that they could review a lot of games and not have to use a lot, take up a lot of space in the magazine.
Hmm.
Hint, hint, GamePro. But let's see. Oh yeah, the Shenmue issue preview. Oh man, God, this
yeah, when they talk about chapters.
Yeah,
chapter one.
Actually happened, did it?
Yeah. God, man. I still love that game. You know, it's by modern standards, it's kind of primitive. And
there's like Neo Geo Pocket games that covering arcade yeah. stuff, Marvel vs. Capcom
and,
2.
And then
yeah, they were all over the place, but that's kind of what I liked about them because you got a good variety for your money.
Oh God, I love this We're Not Pigs thing. Stop it. Here, that other thing he just gave, there's a thing here that says, ever wonder why we feel the constant need to print pictures of women in the world of wrestling? We simply want to make sure females get equal representation in this male-dominated sport. That's all. bullshit.
Okay.
They got pictures of women half-naked wrestling.
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
EGM was good.
Yeah. EGM for its faults, and it did have some faults. The big thing they did for me was that, yeah, they were the first gaming magazine to introduce me to the Japanese gaming culture. And kind of vicariously also anime. So, yeah. I gotta give them that. So, is there anything else we'd like to add before we sign off?
I really like the Quarterman stuff where they had the rumors they printed every month.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the rumor section.
And like one or two were true, the rest were bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've said that since.
Oh, yeah. That,
they had
that
like one thing that was legit and they would pick up other stuff to see.
There was one other tradition with EGM that I completely forgot to mention. The April Fool's gag.
Oh, yeah. I think the best one was the Street Fighter 2 one.
Yeah. Basically, Street Fighter 2, they came up with a rumor that there was a particular... What was the particular thing you had to do?
It was basically you had to get perfect on every single fight.
Yeah.
Up until you got to Bison.
And then what would happen is that this dude would flip into the stage, throw Bison out of it, and then you would fight him. And the guy that you were supposedly supposed to fight was a guy called Shang Long.
Yeah.
Because, as everybody remembers in Street Fighter 2,
Ryu's win quote was
you have to defeat Shang Long to beat me.
Yeah.
Or I think it was you have to beat Shang Long to beat me, whatever. What people don't realize, though, is that Shang Long was actually just a bad translation of the Shoryuken.
Yeah.
So, the thing is, Capcom actually kind of hit the stride because it's because of that whole thing we ended up getting Akuma in Super Street Fighter 2.
Yeah.
Where you basically sort of do the exact same thing, and Akuma literally does the exact same thing. He rolls in, throws away Bison. And it doesn't matter what difficulty level you'll have the game on then either, because he will kick your ass.
Well, Super Street Fighter 2, it doesn't matter what difficulty level you have it set on anyway, because the game just doesn't adhere to any.
Some other famous ones. Oh, probably the one that, other than the Street Fighter one, they're most infamous for. The Tomb Raider 2 Lara nude code.
Yeah. A lot of people tried to get that one to work.
Yeah.
The other one I liked was the realistic looking Wind Waker.
getting to play Sonic and Tails in Super Smash Brothers Melee.
Yeah. Turns out
that actually happened in the next Super Smash Brothers game.
Yeah.
Minus Tails.
Not Sonic anyway.
Sonic did. In fact, he was literally the last character in the campaign that would show up.
Yeah.
He's also the most annoying.
Yeah, as far as the tips and tricks, though, they had some pretty good stuff there. One of the ones that I really liked a lot was whenever a new Mega Man would come out, they would reverse engineer the password system and tell you exactly what dot did what, so you could actually tailor the make your own passwords.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's
a lot of work.
So yeah, EGM.
Want to go through this Quarterman from March 2000, see what was right, what was wrong?
You know what? Let's go ahead and do it.
Okay, first one, Xbox just ain't happening.
No, that's wrong. Because it did.
Flying Tiger's working on a third Time Crisis game for the PlayStation.
I think...
That actually did happen. Although, I don't think it came out on the PlayStation. There was a third Time Crisis game, though.
Yeah, but it came out on PS2. Yeah.
Let's see. Sony's working on new consumer electronics items with the PS2. 15-inch LCD TV. That's the one they mentioned.
Yeah, I don't think that one actually happened.
I remember like a portable screen for it.
Well, yeah, a lot of third parties did that, but I don't think Sony themselves did it.
No. They did that one for the PS1, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Let's see. They talk about the PS3 already. It's said to be 1,000 times more powerful than the PS2. No one's pinning a date on when it would be unveiled.
Actually, I think it wasn't the prototype for the PS3. Like, I think it was like 6 PS2s stuck together.
Yeah,
something like that.
If you want to see something that can render images that look truly real, experts say you'll need something 18,000 times more powerful. let's see. The game of the movie is going to make a welcome unwelcome comeback in 2000. Let's see. Austin Powers, Evil Dead, The Matrix. That's one that Shiny made.
Yeah. They did two of those, actually.
Yeah, Blair Witch game.
Ooh, that was not good.
Bad.
Duke Nukem's going to return on the PS2.
well, technically he did.
Technically.
Yeah. Wasn't Duke Nukem Forever, but there was a Duke Nukem game.
We do have assurances that we'll see a PS1 Duke Nukem game out in the next few months. Called Duke Nukem Time to Kill 2 Planet of the Babes. Followed by a PS2 game soon after the system launches. I don't think that happened.
No.
they say GT will do the honors while Take-Two... We'll do the PS2 game. Take-Two, Rockstar.
Dreaming over there.
Yeah, the Rockstar boss, Sam Houser, describes as the best console version of Duke yet. Okay, rumor here. Sony working on a handheld system to rival Game Boy.
That did eventually kind of happen.
Yeah, it was a little early on that.
Yeah, that's talking about a deal with Palm Computing at that time. Rumors of a memory stick-based handheld device, which that part's true.
Turned out to be the PSP.
Sony could also let the system interface with PS2 with relative ease. Not really interface.
That part didn't actually
happen.
But
it was about that powerful. Mm-hmm. They wanted a piece of the Pokemon pie. Mm-hmm. And it was very much... The internet could be used as the delivery medium for the system, download stuff to your PC, or directly to the Palm device with a wireless modem. Memory sticks allowing up to 64 megabytes. Even more. When I got my PSP, I had a 32 megabit memory stick.
32 meg.
Yeah. Mm. So that's not really that far off.
No.
There's also a big little section here about the Dreamcast 2.
That hurts my heart.
For new Dreamcast specs in the near future, DVD will enter the equation at some point. Anything further has been pure speculation.
That's just bullshit.
Yeah, we've only the Dreamcast 2 rumors haven't stopped till a couple of weeks ago.
The DVD drive could be ready in the first half of 2000, while the new graphics chipset could be implemented as soon as next summer.
The Dreamcast originally was supposed to use 3DFX, but apparently because 3DFX kind of blabbed, Sega killed the deal. That was probably a mistake in hindsight.
I like this part. It's will we see two machines, a deluxe and a standard? Will there be an add-on box, maybe a way of sending your machine back for an upgrade? No one's talking. We do know that new NEC Video Logic graphics chip. It's 100% compatible with the Power VRDC2. So software will run the new chip. Will run with the new chip. But where does that leave existing systems? The Q spies are continuing to hunt down news on the story. Let's hope Sega doesn't repeat any mistakes from its past by diversifying too much.
Weirdly enough, even though that was for a dead system, a lot of that stuff ended up coming true.
Some of it did,
They were off by about a decade and a half.
Yeah, the Power VR chipset still lives on, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In phones.
Yes, they are in your smartphone.
I like this next page has an ad for another Rockstar game where you can get a free pager with it. Wild Metal.
Oh, man.
Actually, now that I think about it, imagine if Rockstar, especially Rockstar North, managed to get their hands on the Duke Nukem license.
Yeah, it might have been
playable.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unlike the catastrophe that Gearbox put out.
Yeah.
I like this line at the end of the Shenmue preview. If they do as good of a job as they did with Sonic Adventure's speech, American gamers should be in for a real treat. We're talking about dubbing.
Wow.
The
standards are being set very low.
You know, now that I think about it, have you guys ever watched the Game Grumps when they played Sonic Adventure?
No.
The original Sonic Adventure and also Sonic Adventure DX. The first one was when John Tron was still on the show. The other one was with Danny. So I don't remember that game being that glitchy.
Yeah, we had rose-colored glasses at the time because, it was pretty bad after a while.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm almost convinced, as far as that goes on the Dreamcast, that game had a memory leak and it would get progressively glitchier as you played it.
No, I would not be surprised.
Yeah,
I remember, especially the Sonic DX, which. Maybe it's just because I remember them playing that and I never played the DX version. Because the DX version is far more glitchy than I remember the original being. I know the original had glitches, but... Or maybe it's just because Aaron Hansen sucks at games. I don't know.
Maybe.
But, oh, yay, the Neo Geo Pocket.
Oh, there's a system that I wish had succeeded. Because it had, the best D-pad
ever. It did.
Yep.
Which it also weighed a ton.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could use it to defend yourself if you needed to.
Well, I think it's about time we wrap up the show.
Yeah.
So, we basically went another 2.5 2.5 hours again.
Yeah, we talk about hair metal for most of it. That's okay.
Okay, so, anybody got anything they'd like to say before we sign off?
Be an informed voter. That's all I got to say.
Don't throw your vote away.
Yeah. Also, if the GOP is going to have their convention in your city, invest in a bomb shelter. I'm just saying.
It might be a good idea.
Yeah. So, with that out of the way, I am going to go ahead and wrap this up. So, I've been your host, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio and Chris Selegy, I will say, good night, folks. Get some sleep out there.